Namaste, not a string I are.
Namaste, not a string I are.
La da da, toyo nae.
La da da, toyo nae.
Hiranyam kashi purvachaha.
Thank you.
Yamuna Tera Vanacharya Kunya Vyare.
Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda, Hari Hari Bo. So, Om Aganata Miramusha, Gananjana, Shlakya, Chakshura, Meditam, Yena, Tezmai, Shigurve Namaha. It's nice to be here. So, do you have any topic or any questions about Krishna consciousness? We'll always leave that up to the devotees, what they'd like to hear about. Any questions?
Oh man, questions.
Oh man. Okay, oh man. What are the questions? Or topics? Any specific?
What do you wear on your face?
What?
What emotion do you wear on your face?
Mask.
Oh, okay.
What devotion do I wear in my face?
Oh, what emotions? Because I don't know how you feel, but do you present how you feel outward? Or do you just kind of, I don't know, like what do you do with your body?
That's a good question. First time I've had that question. These are new questions. This actually makes life interesting.
This is a more modern question.
Yeah, more modern question. What do I do with my body language? If I'm feeling some emotion that's not too intense, I'll express it. And if I'm feeling an emotion that's too intense, I'll hold it back.
Okay.
That's right about that. Too intense because you wouldn't understand it if I start rolling on the ground and crying in ecstasy. And
understand.
I think that would, because people would start imitating, like you'd have Mayapur would start rolling on the ground and imitating me and crying in ecstasy. So it's not a good idea for me to show too much emotion. But I can show some happiness, so I sort of turn the dial down a little bit.
So what am I allowed to show?
What can you show? Show everything.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, you can, someone who was supposed, like me, someone who was supposed to be an example for other people, I can be vulnerable. I mean, in other words, I can express how I feel to a certain extent. And I don't hide things, and I don't lie or cover things up. But at the same time, for me to show the extent of emotion that I'm experiencing, you know, the intensity of emotion that I may be experiencing from time to time, would not be productive as far as my mission.
Okay.
How about that one? That's a good question, a good answer.
That's
and then, but as far as yourself, don't worry about it. I mean, up to a certain extent, I mean, just don't go tearing your clothes off and running around like that. I mean, just be respectful of other people. Probably it's not a good idea to roll on the ground in ecstasy. But if you feel like jumping up and down, certainly jump up and down and scream Hari Bol and all those other nice things.
Yeah. Like things that are established.
I think it's sometimes things that are not established. You could probably get away with a lot more than I can.
I guess I got strong bones.
No, not because of the bones, because of who my responsibility.
Ah, okay, I don't have your responsibility. Anymore.
Well, no, you have responsibility, but it's a question of, like, I got people who would imitate me. And for them, it would not be the best thing in the three worlds for them to be running around imitating me. Whereas probably you, at your particular stage, wouldn't have a lot of people who'd be imitating you. So, but later on, as you advance and you become a leader in the Krishna conscious movement, maybe a guru in the future, because Lord Chaitanya wanted everyone to become a guru, then one has to be setting an example. As Krishna says in the Gita, yad yad acharasti shrestas tatadi vetara jaha, that people with a position in society have an example to set. Just like you see sometimes how our politicians set horrible examples, and then the people follow. I'm not going to mention any politicians, you know, the last president, so-called United States. Mm-hmm. He set a horrible example, and then you have people following that example. So whenever you have a position of leadership, it's a great responsibility. But as they say in that movie, with great power goes great responsibility. With great position, you know, and somehow or other, you know, I don't have great power or anything like that, but, you know, Krishna's arranged for me to guide a lot of people, to be an exemplar for a lot of people. So therefore I have to, or I choose to, I don't have to do anything, but I'm choosing to do what's best for everyone's spiritual life.
Okay, so then behind closed doors, I can express myself for Krishna how.
Yeah,
how
I feel. I mean, you could scream in ecstasy. Lord Chaitanya screamed in ecstasy, devotees scream in ecstasy. Just be considerate of others, you know. If you're screaming, tell people to put their earplugs in first. and if you go to India, especially to some of our festivals, you'll hear people screaming a lot. Especially if you go to Mayapur, you hear, Guruga! Guruga! I remember the first time I went, and I heard Chaitanya Maharaj say, Guruga. And I said, oh my God, what's happening? It's like an earthquake. So we certainly should express ourselves, but also be considerate of others at the same time. So I think consideration of others or responsibility for others is really important. When we think about others, we make a lot of advancement in Krishna consciousness. But certainly, you know, express yourself. You know, don't hold back, you know, let it all out.
Maharaj really stays very simple. But you know, when everyone leaves, he would chant to the deities, or even the deities are closed, he would chant to the pictures out of the wall.
Wow.
And I've seen him, his eyes motion, no? So
you're fortunate. You can chant and nobody will stop you. You can just be there chanting in ecstasy all day long. You stay at the temple all the time, right?
Most of the time.
I'm there. And sometimes I'm not. So.
Most of the time.
How long have you been to the temple for?
Since Narasimha Chaturdashi.
What? Ah, really?
Since then, he's never
hasn't left
anything.
And you help out a little bit there. Or?
I try my best.
Maharaj, not a little bit, a lot.
Yeah.
We depend on him. He's like this now.
So this wow.
Maharaj is there.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you. You have neck beads too, or?
I've heard of it.
You can give him some neck beads.
Yeah. Okay.
That's really important.
It's the Tulsi ones, right?
The Tulsi ones, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Someone came by asking about it, and I didn't know, but I don't know.
Yeah. Definitely, you know, wear some neck beads, because the neck beads are protected. They're like a talisman to protect.
Oh, whoa. Can you get a little deeper into that?
Yeah.
Like, what does that mean? Protect from what?
Protects from evil forces, and, like subtle energies, and a guy named Yamaraj, you know.
How do those manifest?
How
do those evil forces manifest? Like, can I see it coming?
Did you ever see Star Wars?
Yes.
So it's like the dark side of the Force. Not everybody's on the dark side of the Force. I mean, Yamaraj is not, but it's something like that.
Okay.
Something like that. There's two energies in the yin and yang. You've heard about that before. Mm-hmm. Or light and darkness. So they balance each other. So there's entities in this world who are destructive, and there's entities in this world who are constructive. There's entities in this world that are empathic. There's entities in the world that are hateful, or just self-centered, and you know, psychopaths and people like that. So the question is that there's subtle entities too, and subtle forces. Of course, some of the subtle forces we talk about are the three modes of nature. Like goodness, passion, and ignorance.
Yeah.
And they're very subtle forces. So when you associate with someone who is under the jurisdiction of one of those, or several, or a combination of those forces, you become influenced by those forces.
Okay.
Like when you eat prasadam is transcendental. It's sort of like it inoculates, like a vaccination. Inoculates you against the subtle forces of nature. But there's goodness, passion, and ignorance, so you find people who are very ignorant, and not that we like everybody, it's not that we hate everybody, but we understand that certain people's energy may be harmful to our spiritual lives. So anyway, so you wear neck beads, and it protects you against these subtle forces. Of course, you also have to take precautions. Mm-hmm. It's not that you go into the den of iniquity.
I'm not going to pour water over myself and then step into a bonfire.
Yeah. You can't jump off a building or go in and get drunk and expect protection. And then that keeps out.
So is it more like a barrier, or is it like
a sponge? It's a barrier. It's sort of like it's very auspicious, like a talisman. You're a talisman. A talisman is a good luck charm. Like in every culture, they talk about talismans, you know, things that can actually protect you. Like a certain, was it in, I know in Fiji, they have like a whale's tooth or something like that. Was that Fiji or Hawaii?
What Fiji?
No, Hawaii is the only other one.
What was it, Flanders?
They use a whale. I'm not saying it works. I'm saying.
But well, the necklace,
yeah. Yeah, necklace. Yeah, say. Say. I was right. It is from Fiji.
Necklace, yeah.
And so, you know, sort of protective type of thing. So, in Krishna consciousness, we have a spiritually protective type of thing, which is the Tulsi beads, which are very, like, potent and powerful. And they help you come to the spiritual platform.
I guess it would be good to have, especially if you have to go into a situation.
Yeah.
You have to go into a negative situation.
Like yeah, it protects you. And then the holy names protect you, too. When, if you keep chanting, then you're protected in any circumstance. Even the most, let's say, negative forces around you. If you chant the holy names, then the negative forces won't be able to influence your consciousness. So we have many means of protection. They're called kavachas. In Sanskrit. Like, you know, there's Nishinga Kavachas, there's, and she has one there. There and there's Narayan Kavacha, and then, of course, the Tulsi beads are the Kavacha too, they protect one.
Are these all things I wear?
Some devotees wear different types of Kavachas. I just wear the Tulsi mala myself. Some people have a little ring with Lord Nrsimhadeva on it. But, and these are all for protection. These are spiritual objects. The more we surround ourselves with spiritual objects, like the japa beads, you know, the chanting beads, these actually create an aura of protection around us.
Nice.
So we're protected from all sorts of influences.
So, we'll talk about tilak as well.
About who? Tilak. Oh yeah, tilak. You know, the stuff I have on
the decorating stuff?
Yeah, decorating the body is the temple of God. And this is like a kavacha too. We say the mantras. There's certain mantras. It's not just the clay, but it's actually you say, you know, Keshavaya Namaha, different mantras at different parts of the body. I'm sure that you have that in the temple, right?
Yeah.
Share the question.
How did it feel when you met
Prabhupada? Oh, wow. What an intelligent devotee you have here. I met Prabhupada when I was a little older than you. I was about 20, 21 years old, and it was in Florida also, a place called Gainesville, Florida, which is pretty close to here. And what happened is I was living on a farm before that with some friends, and I didn't want to move in the temple, but 1 week before Prabhupada came to Gainesville, Florida, in 1971, I got notice that Prabhupada was coming, and then Krishna in my heart, going somewhere? Oh, chair. Krishna in my heart told me, Prabhupada is coming, you have to surrender to him. So even 1 week before Prabhupada came, I felt Prabhupada's presence. So then, right before Prabhupada came, I was assigned to get lotus flowers for Prabhupada. Prabhupada came to the Jacksonville airport, because at that time they didn't have flights coming to the Gainesville airport. It was a long time before. So I went swimming in his lake to get lotus flowers for Prabhupada. And as you know, most of the lakes in this part of Florida have what in them? Alligators. So I could see, as I was picking the lotus flowers, I could see this little nose sticking up from the water. But I thought, Krishna will protect me. And Krishna did protect me. So then, right after I collected the flowers for Prabhupada came to the temple, and the devotees were throwing flowers from the second story of the temple, so it seemed like the flowers were coming from the heavenly planets when Prabhupada walked in the door. And the first thing when I saw Prabhupada, I just like bow down immediately. I hit the dirt, as they said. And I looked up and I was crying. This is the first time I saw Prabhupada. Because I had heard Prabhupada before on the radio, and I read Krishna book. You know Krishna book, the stories about Krishna. I had read Krishna book about Prabhupada and Krishna stories. But I was just crying. I recognized Prabhupada as my spiritual master, and just seeing Prabhupada for the first time, I felt like I had gone back to the spiritual world. And then Prabhupada walked in, and I remember very clearly, Prabhupada went to the temple, offered obeisances, and gave a wonderful class about Krishna. And then we went on, went to the college there, where Prabhupada gave a lecture in the middle of the day at the University of Florida in Gainesville. And I remember sitting in front of Prabhupada, just listening to Prabhupada. And then I went on a television program with Prabhupada, which is called Transcendental Broadcast. They actually had a transcript for that. And then at night, Prabhupada gave initiation. I sat in Prabhupada's room. I didn't take initiation that night because I had just joined. And Prabhupada was dressed just in a gumsha. That means he came right over his knees. And he had golden skin. It was radiant. Prabhupada was radiant. It was just the most beautiful sight I've ever seen in this world. And Prabhupada was giving beads to different devotees. One devotee actually took his beads with the left hand, and Prabhupada took them back, tried to take them back. Because Prabhupada said right hand. And then that was my first experience with Prabhupada. And it was a little temple in Gainesville, Florida, a rented house and a rented bed for Prabhupada. And my mother came to visit the temple the next day after Prabhupada left. And because it was Prabhupada's, was a rented bed, we had her stay in the same bed Prabhupada stayed. She got the mercy. And then another thing is, you made this big Vyasasan for Prabhupada. Some of you have heard the story before. But the Vyasasan was as big as that couch. You see that couch? And so we decided to take the Vyasasan to the airport. But as you see, that couch is wider than a car. So we had to put it in the van, and part of it was sticking out into the next lane of traffic. So we were driving about an hour and a half from Gainesville to Jacksonville, through the road with this thing sticking out of the back. And then we were running through the airport carrying this big couch for Prabhupada, and Prabhupada laughed at us. And so those are, I mean, the many other stories of Prabhupada. I was with Prabhupada in India, of Prabhupada went on morning walks with Prabhupada in Los Angeles and other places. New York was with Prabhupada. With Prabhupada. But wherever I was with Prabhupada, I always felt like I was in the spiritual world. It was like being with my eternal father, someone who I recognized from my past life. I recognized who Prabhupada was immediately, without any question. And that's devotional service, that if one's not completely Krishna conscious in one's lifetime, one gets a chance to take it up in the next lifetime. And one's relationship with the spiritual master is eternal. And if someone doesn't go back to the spiritual world, the spiritual master comes back to get that person. So Prabhupada has come back to get us, and also carry out his mission, not just to get back, get me. That would be a big guilt feeling. Prabhupada came back to the material world to get me. It was almost like Jesus died for my sins or something like that. So that's what happened with Prabhupada. And then, of course, I understand that Prabhupada is in his books. Every time I read Prabhupada's books, I read Krishna book all the time. And I feel like I'm with Prabhupada again. So that's, thank you for that, asking a question. Very nice question. That's the best question tonight. High five. So, what other questions do we have about Krishna consciousness? Or topics you'd like to hear about?
I have a lot of questions, but none come to my mind, you know, and simply what should I focus on, you know, what should be my priorities as I live my life?
Well, you have several priorities. Your spiritual life, are you chanting rounds every day, or how many rounds?
16.
16?
But, you know, I do it like you were saying yesterday, you know.
Because you have to.
It's mechanical. Sometimes I feel good, but sometimes I'm doing it because I need to do my rounds.
Well, then just change your consciousness. Just think, I'm choosing to do my rounds because I want to connect with Krishna. Give yourself a very simple reason for doing it. And then it becomes much better than, I'm doing it because I have to finish them. When you finish them, oh my God, I have 10 more rounds to chant. Oh my God, you know, then you're just thinking, it becomes a burden after some time. So give yourself a reason. And so, you know, your rounds and your chanting are your first priority, and your family is a priority, very high priority too. You have children, so your priority is bringing them to Krishna. And that's really important.
And how do I do that, Maharaj? I struggle just to keep myself on the path, and how do I inspire?
Well, first, be a good example yourself. Example is the most important thing. And then take time with your children to read to them, talk to them about Krishna. Help them as they go to school. There'll be social pressure from, you know, just the other students to conform to the American so-called way of life, and you have to give them a role model so they don't succumb to that American way of life. But don't force them to do anything. No forced chanting. Let them chant or not chant, whatever way. Let them eat any type of prasadam they want to eat. Let them wake up any time in the morning they want to wake up. That's not important. The main point is your own example and your loving relationship with your children and your wife. It's like, no force. If someone wants to chant, that's fine. If someone doesn't, that's fine. Everybody has their free will. You know, even in one chance, Hare Krishna, one time, Hare Krishna, then we offer respects in the mind to such a person. Mm-hmm. So there's no question of force with yourself, or no question of force with anyone else with your family. You just like, if you are loving and supportive of your family, they will follow in your footsteps, and you won't have to force them to do anything. And if you're loving with yourself too, and not forcing yourself, don't do things out of guilt, out of fear, or anything like that. Just do things because you're choosing to do them, as I mentioned last night, because it really helps you connect with your own self and inner needs, and respect others too, who may not be as interested like that. And children function on the basis of role models. And so we have to give, that's the main thing, give people good role models. I remember when I was young, I had some good material role models, not spiritually role models, obviously. My parents were not spiritualists per se, by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, my mother was very educated, hardworking, and stuck to, you know, the rules and regulations of society. My father was very hardworking. He would wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, come back from work at 10 o'clock at night, you know. And so I had him as a role model, and very responsible for the family. So, of course, nothing spiritual out of that role model stuff, but at least ethical, moral, responsible came out of that. I can attribute, you know, whatever ethical, moral, apart from spirituality, to that, and then I have Prabhupada as a role model for my spirituality. Prabhupada, of course, is also ethical, moral, spiritual, dedicated, you know, whatever, to the highest degree. So that's how people function, because it's people they look up to. If we don't have people that we look up to, then everything's just very theoretical. So with your children, that's basically all you got to do. That's all you got to do, and then they'll turn out. I mean, then they have a choice. Everybody has a choice. Krishna had a child who became a demon. Bhoma who became Bhomasura.
Oh.
And then Kekasi, you know the Ramayana?
Mm-hmm.
Kekasi had a child and became a devotee. You know Kekasi, the mother?
Kekasi.
Kekasi, you don't know the Ramayana? Kaikasi is the mother of Ravana, Kumbhakarna, and Vibhishan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, in Sanskrit it's Kaikasi.
Okay.
And Vishravas, you know, anyway. So she was a demon lady.
Mm.
And she had two really bad boys and one good boy. So everybody has their choices. That's the way I look at it. All we can do is offer Krishna to people. And then naturally, if we do that offering with a good heart, because Krishna is all attractive, people will become attracted. But if we do it forcing, then we're actually going to force people away from Krishna.
Hmm.
So that to me, that's a very important principle. We don't want to traumatize people with Krishna consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever they feel comfortable with, it's fine.
Yeah, then I have been making a mistake. I will not ask my daughter to chant one round every day, though. You know, I've been asking her, kind of harassing her a little bit.
Yeah,
so. Do not. Okay. I wanted to admit that I didn't.
If she wants to, it's great.
Yeah.
If she doesn't, that's her choice. We love her anyway. Your love is causeless. Just like Krishna's love for us is causeless.
Mm-hmm.
Krishna loves us if we're devotees. Krishna loves us if we're not devotees. And Krishna wants the best thing for us. Of course, Krishna wants us to be devotees, but Krishna's love is not conditional.
Mm-hmm.
So the parents' love is not conditional. And the children should be given that choice. And that.
So you can ask them if they want to, right?
Yeah, of course. So would you like to? Would you like to?
Mm.
And if you don't, that's fine. That's your choice.
Mm.
And no guilt either.
Thanks for the clarification, Maharaj. Because my mind understood it as I shouldn't even approach the topic, but this clarification helped me. I can ask her the question, but not tell her you have to do it.
That's right. And no guilt trips either.
Yeah.
Guilt trips means something like, you know, you don't have to chant if you don't want, but it's causing me great pain to see you becoming a demon. you're causing your mother and father great pain. That's a guilt trip.
Mm.
You're destroying my life.
Mm.
And no names. All right, if you want to be a demon, you can be a demon. You know, I'm sure I've heard stuff like that. You're all right.
A guru.
Yeah, it's a guru cool with training. It's just like, whatever, they want to chant. And people who voluntarily do something are enthusiastic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they choose to do it, that's why you see me so enthusiastic, because I chose to become a devotee. Nobody told me to. People told me the opposite. I mean, sometimes people told me the opposite. But I chose to do what I'm doing. If someone had forced me, then it would have taken a lot longer for me to be Krishna conscious. So with children, I mean, just...
Force is very bad.
What?
Forcing Krishna on people is very bad.
Yeah, it's very bad.
Yeah.
It's very bad. I mean, I always tell the story how 2 years before I actually met Prabhupada, I went into a Hare Krishna temple and they tried to force me to become a devotee.
Mm-hmm.
Not, you know, with threats and guns or anything like that, but they told me if I didn't do that, I would be committing sins, or, you know, they were talking about Kali Yuga, how people were going to live as short, become as short as dwarfs, and live underground, and eat human flesh and everything like that, or Yamaraj. You know, they devotees have all sorts of interesting things. I remember they were quoting one verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam about how in Kali Yuga the she-jackals would vomit fire, just to scare me to bits. Just like the Christians do. Like the Christians, they say, well, you're going to hell unless you surrender to Jesus. So we have devotees who do exactly the same thing. And that kept me, for 2 years, I just stayed away from the devotees.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I knew about Krishna consciousness, I stayed away from the devotees until I met Prabhupada. And then I had the right situation. Was it the right temple? You know, everybody at the temple was educated like me. You know, university education. You know, it was also, it had to do with the situation too. That I had like-minded people in the temple that I could relate to as friends. So, you know, all these things are important factors. Don't force yourself and don't force others. Krishna consciousness is attractive. We have to, what my philosophy is that Krishna's name is Krishna. And if someone chants Krishna's name, because Krishna is all attractive, that's what the name means, Krishna, and gives one bliss, then they'll experience it. I mean, all I have to do is get, is encourage people to chant Krishna's name. And Krishna's name takes over after that point. Yeah, and then people ask some questions. That's why generally when I do programs, I ask people to ask questions because they want to be relevant. You know, I can just give a class on something that's completely irrelevant but spiritual right now. You know, from the Bhagavad Gita or from the Srimad Bhagavatam or something like that. And or Mahabharata. I can tell Mahabharata stories. But I just want to be relevant and just what people need to hear at a particular point. So your question is relevant as far as the children. And we've had a lot of success with children in New Goloka, our temple there, because our teacher is a second generation. One of our teachers is a first generation. The first generation devotee is Mother Urmila. And then, you know, we have second generation people who are working, and then third generation. Like we have our temple president, Leela Shakti, has two children. I think one of them is watching. He's a fanatic, Ishwara Chaitanya. He's watching me right now. He's like fanatic. He's like 13 years old. He goes to Mangalarti. He's initiated, second initiated. Her daughter, Sundari Radha, is actually, she's 16 now. She does deity worship at the temple. Addressing the deity, she's second initiated. So, you know, so, and they just like voluntarily gravitated to her because they had role models. I mean, their mother's a good role model, father's a good role model, and their guru was trying to be a good role. And, you know, and I work with the kids too, you know, I joke with them and everything like that, so they like me because I'm not like one of these heavy gurus, you know, just comes around and tells everybody they're Maya. You know, I may watch Star Wars with them sometimes too. So anyway, that's the secret. And then people choose. Some people choose not to. That's fine.
So going back to priorities,
yeah.
You said chanting.
Chanting, well, your family's a very high priority.
Mm.
Very high. I don't want to say that your chanting's a higher priority. I get in trouble. So, chanting and your family, because to properly take care of your family, everything's connected. I can't say one is higher priority than the other.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important to take care of one's basic needs and not neglect one's basic needs in the idea of taking care of one's spiritual needs. Sometimes you'll find people who are so spiritual they neglect their basic needs and their life gets ruined as a result. So you have basic, you know, physical needs, emotional needs, social needs, familial needs, which all have to be taken care of to progress at a steady pace in spiritual life. The whole idea is slow and steady. You know the typical story of the tortoise and the rabbit?
Mm-hmm.
How the rabbit and the tortoise were running the race, mm-hmm. and the tortoise actually won because the rabbit was a little too passionate. He would take care of his needs, whatever needs. It's a little bit too enthusiastic. And the tortoise just proceeded at a deliberate pace and he won. So the moral of the story is that we shouldn't think that we're too spiritual than we actually are and just continue Krishna consciousness at a deliberate pace, not thinking that we can do more or are more than we actually are or could do. Then Krishna consciousness is very nice. It's not a passionate endeavor. It should be a deliberate endeavor, you know, step by step.
Mm.
And that's what's kept me all these years. I'm just, of course, in the beginning I was pretty passionate, but now, you know, after all these years, I've learned a few lessons. Krishna consciousness. So I just, you know, whatever I can do for Krishna, I can do. I'm not running a marathon right now. You know, I'm just trying to do what I can do at the pace that I can do it. I pace myself. All right?
How do I stay in touch with you, Maharaj?
Let's see. All right. The best way is usually WhatsApp because it's easier for me. WhatsApp, email is kind of unwieldy for me. WhatsApp allows me to reply through different means like voice.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, very quick messages. Emails become much more of a formal type of exchange, which I try to avoid. You know, WhatsApp, or, you know, WhatsApp is usually good way.
Can I have your permission to communicate with
you? Yeah,
you
just have to ask Vipayana for information on WhatsApp. Mm-hmm. I think I even have a card with my telephone number, which is connected to WhatsApp. WhatsApp. Confirmed. Yeah. Here it is.
My
card.
Oh man, my back.
You're back. You're not accustomed to sitting on the floor.
No.
You better sit on a chair then.
I need to stretch.
Better sit on a chair or whatever.
I'll listen to my Guru Maharaj. If he says that,
I need
to
sit on a chair. If you're not accustomed to sitting on the floor, I mean, I could sit on the floor or on the chair. But it takes, when I first started Krishna consciousness, I wasn't accustomed to sitting on the floor. It was really painful. But after a while, it's just, I can do either one right now. But
Brahmaji has been very, very helpful to our temple.
Good.
You know, standing 16 rounds, falling the forehead, and helping 2 to 3 days a week in the temple also.
Yeah, if we could help bring more people to the temple, to assist with the temple, because this temple has a lot of potential. I mean, it's an amazing piece of land, amazing location. I mean, there's no reason why we shouldn't have like a nice temple on that property. Mm-hmm. Nice temple. I mean, it's not such a big thing, you know, because you got the land already, mm-hmm. which is extremely valuable. Just need to encourage people to come. We need to build up the congregation first. I think to build something prematurely is not a good idea. You have to build the people first. There was a movie one time, I always like these movies, called Field of Dreams.
Yeah.
I'm sure you saw that, where someone built a baseball field in his cornfield, and he expected the dead players to come. So it's not that we build a building and people will come. There's plenty of big buildings without people.
Yes.
But we build up people and then the buildings come.
Yes.
So oftentimes people make the mistake, they just build a big building and expect something to happen. And then the big building becomes a major albatross, you know, a major burden with maintaining and everything like that. And you just gotta be practical. Get the people will build the building. And then, but we already, you know, you have the foundation. You have some good people here. You know, Dwipaya and his family, they're very good. And yourself. And it's a question of cultivating people, bringing people to Krishna consciousness, and avoiding all sorts of politics. You know, we don't criticize any Vaishnava. We're appreciative of every Vaishnava. Some people have different opinions. That's their responsibility. Like, we have devotees in our movement who don't like vaccines. I try to get them to take the vaccine. But that's their opinion. I'm not going to demonize anyone because of what they believe in. But so we have to be careful, because the modern society in America, there's this whole demonization of people who don't believe in you. I'm not talking about Krishna consciousness. I'm talking about the political situation right now. You know, they demonize and they attack. I was just looking at several news reports the other day that it was a school board meeting and they were talking about wearing masks, and the parents started to attack the people who wanted the children to wear masks. you know, physically. Physically attack them. So this is the mood, you know, somehow or other this mood in America has become more prominent during the last few years for some reason, which I'm not going to mention. It's become more prominent, and so we cannot allow that mood to seep into our own consciousness. You know, we want to appreciate everybody for where they're at. That's all. If someone doesn't agree with us, that's fine. But everyone, all the devotees, as far as I see, are trying to please Krishna, perhaps in a different way than me, but they're trying to please Krishna. In our Krishna Conscious Movement, we have people with different methods of spreading Krishna consciousness. We have people who are extremely conservative and people who are extremely liberal. And the world's big enough for everybody.
Mm.
We just have to, you know, basically love and appreciate everybody. And if we do that, then the movement here will spread nicely in Orlando. Orlando's an important city. And so we should try to reach out and bring more people to Krishna consciousness. And then, yeah, I wouldn't worry about building anything right now. It's a question of reaching out, being kind, and then things will happen. Just like we started this temple in North Carolina, and I started with practically no resources. We had a piece of land that I was able to get, you know, because of some expertise, without resources. And I just reached out to people, and we have this beautiful, magnificent temple, Radha Krishna deity worship now, and a lot of land, and big festivals, and all sorts of prasadam and university preaching going on, and everything. And basically because we just concentrated on people rather than on buildings. So I think that should be our priority. Don't worry about money, don't worry about buildings, worry about people. And then things will work out. All right, any other questions? Yes.
You were talking before about like when it clicked for you.
Yeah.
So how does it click for most people? Is it hearing Krishna's name or chanting Krishna's name? Is that kind of how it clicks in most people's heads?
That's an interesting question. For me, it was the first time I heard Krishna's name on the radio with Prabhupada.
To be fair, you were already kind of looking in that general direction.
Yeah, and I was already chanting Om, you know. So. Yeah, I was already a vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to be fair. And to be fair, you know, there's the past life stuff and everything too, so that's just being fair. I guess I was an unusual case. But with some people, it's hearing the name. With other people, it's taking prasadam. It's other people, it's the relationships. You know, the loving relationships between devotees. With other people, it's like reading a verse from the Bhagavad Gita and hearing, you're not the body. This material world is temporary. Or hearing that Krishna is the most attractive person. You know, hearing from Prabhupada. It just, everybody has a different, like, Satori, you know, a wake-up experience.
Satori?
Yeah. that's a Zen word. Actually, you know, just wake up, whoa. You know, everybody has a different, that's not a Sanskrit word.
Okay.
That's just...
wake-up experience.
Yeah, the wake-up experience. Don't worry, it's not a Sanskrit word. Everybody has a different, like, wow. Wake up. You know, some people just see the devotees chanting Hare Krishna.
I guess I was wondering, like, since you've been with people a lot more than me, I don't know if you've seen some kind of pattern over these different, because again, everyone's different, but we're very similar, you know?
I think it's basically people start chanting and they have some realizations.
Okay.
That's basically what I've seen. They start chanting and it's like the eyes, like I mentioned yesterday, it's like cleaning the glasses, where the eyes get opened up. The eyes get, just wait, you know, it's always time for prasadam later on, but the eyes get opened up and then you start to realize things. You have, anyway, there's different words from the 1960s that probably nobody understands, but there's one word called grokking. No one's heard that word.
Grok?
Grok, G-R-O-K.
Yeah.
G-R-O-K.
No, that's dated.
That's dated. Where it just like makes sense to you, it strikes you. When you start chanting, or when you meet someone, everybody, I think, I've just seen a million and one ways that people just come into Krishna. Or the friendship from devotees, or someone's, you know, sometimes people just looking for knowledge. Or sometimes people in distress, or sometimes people are, you know, whatever reason, they want to be successful in this world. Like we got a lot of people, many people in the Indian community who come because they want some blessings for their business. Mm-hmm. Some people come in and want their cars blessed.
Mm-hmm.
You did that?
Yeah.
You wanted your cars blessed?
No, I'm for others.
Oh, for others, yeah, they want their cars blessed. The first time someone did that, they brought their car to the temple and said, you know, I'm offering my car to Krishna. And I said, oh, thank you. And they said, no, that's not what I meant. Another time I was doing a fire sacrifice and someone put gold coins right in the fire sacrifice, you know, right around the oven. And I said, well, thank you very much. I said, no, we were just purifying our gold. So, you know, people come for a variety of reasons, and Krishna recognizes that, and I think that's up to the individual. The individual, what usually with the young people, like people, what age are you?
23.
Yeah, your age. People are looking for some purpose in life. Usually like from 19 to about 23, 24. People think, you know, why am I doing what I'm doing? And they're, you know, the parents or the other people in society are telling you, well, your business is just to be responsible, to have a job, to have education, and to have a family, and to reproduce, and to be a good grandparent,
and then to die.
Yeah. And that's what my mother told me. Yeah. But that didn't satisfy me. I just thought, you know, but that's not a purpose. That's just what you do, but you know, what is the purpose? What's the meaning of it all? I think young people in particular want some meaning in their life. You know, a meaningless life has no value. So for youth, I think that's one of the main things. And people say, you know, what's the meaning? You know, where did I come from? Where am I going at the time of death? You know, what's God, or does God exist? You know, who created everything? You know, just like when I was young, I would look up at the stars in the sky and think, this is amazing, you know, there must be a God, you know, who's created all these amazing things. Of course, as I mentioned yesterday, I studied science. So even science, the study of science convinced me there must be a God. Because everything is so unbelievably complex and ordered. And if anyone's ever studied science, you know, the different constants in the universe are so just like finely tuned that it just couldn't happen by chance, or the formation of life, even the cellular life, the different entities in the cell, or the proteins, you know, just getting to a little bit of science or biology there, are so amazing that there must be something behind the whole thing. So, I mean, science was a big impetus for me too. So, there's many reasons. Then, as people get older, One reason is they get smashed so much. Yeah, they had some big expectations about life, and life didn't live up to those expectations. You know, they expected a perfect marriage where the wife would just stay in the kitchen and roll roadies all the time. And then they found out that the wife knows how to talk. Yes, many years ago, it didn't work out for one reason or other. Mm-hmm. But basically, I mean, you know, people should stay together in marriages, but if they find out that it wasn't, you know, life is not just like a Bollywood movie. You know, life has, you know, when people die, when you're facing the fact of seeing your relatives die, your friends die, or get sick. I mean, right now, because, you know, I'm 72 years old, I practically have one person a week that I know who dies. You know, because I got a lot of disciples and they have parents. And you know, there's a lot of people I know. I mean, thousands of, when you know thousands of people, and at least half of them are just, you know, above 60, then you're definitely going to know people who die of it, especially with COVID. You know, so, you know, last year we lost some of our friends, you know, one of my good friends, Dr. Trumauer. So you just, but you see this, you know, it's not just a one-off thing. And you just like question, you know, hey, what's happening? What's life all about? So as you get older, too, there's impetuses. When you're young, you don't have those same impetuses because generally you're healthy, not everybody, of course. But generally, someone who's young is healthy, everything's going well, you know, you can do sacrifices, austerities, you can travel the world, you can really rough it, live in a tent, you know, just travel the world and just be, you know, the world is my oyster, as they say. But when you get older, there's different impetuses. Or sometimes people who are young go through terrible experiences with their parents. You know, or abusive situations, and then they get frustrated with the material world because of that, and then they start to ask questions and they start to look for answers. I mean, I would say there's probably an unlimited number of reasons why people would take up spiritual life. And Krishna recognized. But whatever the reason is, after people chant, they come to the point of doing things out of just love rather than escape or rather than looking for knowledge or anything like that. They do things voluntarily from the heart. And that's really where we want to get to ultimately. And that's the real happiness. Alright?
I think so.
Alright. So, another question.
Because I'm curious, you said, you know, people have a choice.
Yeah.
So, when it clicks, is the choice to pursue that click or to ignore it? Is there another choice?
Some
like
people, yeah,
you
could ignore it. You could ignore the click and you say, no. Don't want that. I got too many things to do in my life. I'm still young, you know, or I have too many responsibilities. Yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of ways you can deal with the click, and it can click. It'll click again until you unclick.
So then, how about the next choice of whether or not you want to serve Krishna, or deliberately not serve Krishna?
Yeah, you have that choice. So no, I don't want it.
So is that where you? Is that the distinction between a demon and...
I don't like to use the word demon so
okay.
much. I would say someone who has not yet realized his position as servant of Krishna. So if we put too many labels on people, then we tend to see people like that.
So it's not so much that they're neglecting Krishna, it's that they haven't... serving Krishna yet.
They don't know what their real self-interest is.
Okay.
It's like... Lord Chaitanya gave the example of someone who had a father who left a lot of money to him, or gold, buried gold, and he just didn't know where to dig. He dug in the wrong place. So Krishna, you know, the people don't know what their real self-interest is, and therefore they look outside. I'm actually paraphrasing a verse in the Bhagavatam by saying this. Exactly, Yeva Hiyaratya Manina, this is Sanskrit. They look outside. And then they accept as leaders blind people, so it's like blind people like leading the other blind. And they both fall into a ditch. Anda yatanda vidyamanas, that's Sanskrit. So, yeah, I mean, people have a choice, but I like to see people as just they just don't know what their real self-interest is, rather than seeing people as demons. Although, you'll find in Prabhupada's books, the word demon is used quite often, which is really interesting. And Prabhupada is saying that because it's important to make a distinction between those who are opposed to Krishna and those who are actually for Krishna. But in my particular, let's say, way of seeing things, I like to see people, I don't like to put that label on people. I would say they're acting, you may say they're acting demoniacally or they're acting in a way that's counterproductive to their spiritual progress, interacting the weight and ignorance to their real self-interest. That's how I like to see people.
Okay, because I know there's stories of like demons.
Oh, they're
running around.
Yeah, well, that's different. That's those are Christians' pastimes.
Okay.
Those
so I'm thinking like, does everyone come around eventually?
Not necessarily, but they, I would say in most cases, yes. Mm-hmm. But someone can choose not to come around if they don't want to come around. But time is unlimited, so, you know, I guess eventually it gets to everybody after a while. Mm-hmm. You know, you got unlimited eternal time, so after a while you start to think, you know, it's not so nice to act like this anymore.
I guess it gets old eventually.
Yeah, that definitely gets old after many lifetimes in this world. All right. So we take a little prasada, is that what you're talking
yes,
about?
Yes, I need to make the offering, so I need to make...
Yeah, just a little, I'll just take a little fruit, I don't eat it.
Yes, that's my bad.
But everybody else is...
Oh, temples is offering.
Oh, you got an Instapot.
Oh, rice cookers.
That's an Instapot. That's what I use. That's how I cook. I use an Instapot when I cook.
Is that different from rice cooker?
This is a pressure cooker. It's a pressure.
Oh, pressure cooker. Okay.
What? I make pasta. Kasha, you saw my
cookie
video.
Yes.
Yeah.
And after that, I bought buckwheat. It's so good.
Yeah.
Buckwheat is so tasty.
Toasted buckwheat. Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
So I have that every day.
Yeah. Oh, no. Not the toasted one. Have you got the local regular one?
Oh, no. Your toasted one's much better. It has a very nice taste to it.
Oh.
You can get toasted one around here.
Whole Foods?
What's that?
I'm having trouble.
What?
I'm having trouble.
Really?
Yes.
It's called Kasha. Kasha.
My daughter did this weekly.
So, what do you guys buy? Do you guys travel together?
Yes.
Oh.
No, not everywhere.
Everywhere. Everywhere.
He used to travel everywhere with me.
But then I turned away from Krishna. So now
no, he's just joking.
Oh, okay. Well, whatever the case is, you're here now.
Yeah. They're usually in New Orleans.
You know what? There were some devotees that came by this past Sunday from New Orleans.
Yes.
Power and such. Is that what you guys are here to?
His name is Mickey.
From New Orleans?
From New Orleans.
Okay.
From
so, store. I guess, you know, whenever they fix it up.
Bengali devotees?
No, wait. American.
Oh, okay.
Mickey.
Oh, that's well. You know, take your time. Orlando's nice.
Yeah, it was already because yesterday to come. It was a nice program here.
Yeah, they're going back to New Orleans in a little while.
You're welcome to visit us.
Yeah. New Orleans.
Where is New Orleans?
Just a little bit west.
West. Never. Okay, west.
So Louisiana.
I was going to introduce him.
I don't know.
He just came here to serve some time.
Arizona.
And he also spent some time in Australia. And he's good friends with Neil Madhava.
Oh, you know Neil Madhava?
Where's Texas?
Wow.
There.
Vijay Gopi.
You know, Vijay Gopi K, Neil Madhava.
Just like North America.
What part of Australia did you live in?
Is it?
Oh.
What?
Okay.
That's nice.
Yeah.
That's nice. They go cool.
Oh, you guys are so close.
We're right there.
You know Kali and Krishna there?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, they're nice devotees.
Oh, that. Oh, my goodness.
What's that?
Well, now I know.
We're staying in New Orleans.
Oh, New Orleans. I spend a lot of time in Australia. But right now they're locked down.
Oh, well that's easy. I hope I won't get lost.
Bernard.
It's nice to meet you guys too.
Yeah, Sydney. Sydney's very nice. A lot of nice devotees in Sydney. Yeah, Neela Madhava, I miss him. I miss him for a long time. Neela Madhava.
So right now the flight is still not going to Fiji, or okay?
Fiji is completely closed until at least November and December. You can't. I mean, you could go because you. Well, you don't have your citizenship there anymore, do you?
No.
You can't go. You have to wait till at least probably December till they open up.
Water.
Because
we're missing it very badly in Fiji.
Yeah. I mean, I just had a big initiation in Nandi about 2 weeks ago. We had about 25 devotees take initiation.
Yeah.
Nandi.
Yeah. I'm so happy that you've come to Orlando. Because you know, there are so many people who want to take move forward, and I cannot recommend anyone. So now he's serious, Bernard is there, and everyone from yesterday. And so amazing.
Tomorrow, well, a lot of people come to tomorrow's.
Tomorrow's program, so I'm arranging a program in a different category wise. Do you want to do media for personally and take something?
Yes.
Tomorrow is the Bhakti Vriksha people. Who mostly, all of them are South Indians.
South Indians.
And they help the temple so much.
Right.
Financially, service, everything. All of them are like changing so much. Vegetarians, of course.
Yeah.
So, but they are my people, in a way. So,
do they still come and help?
Oh, yes, madam. Anytime. All of them, they're ready.
Okay, good.
So that's why I was telling you yesterday, the devotees, they will come and do kirtan and then they'll go. But the work that has to be done, you know, and also mentally
helped
me and my wife
talked
to us, you
guys
doing
well, all those things. So the South Indian community. Yes. So this will be a different
community,
more family-oriented community. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Sharon,
you should MCU
and hope to help inspire themselves to take a Krishna consciousness as the world.
Let me go offline right now. Just go online.